the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get it going. It is Tuesday, September 24th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. From our Groundworks downtown studio, Steinberg and Wes. Wes, of course, post-media, Flames beat writer. Hello, buddy. How we doing?
Good, buddy. You?
I'm good. It's a 3-for-3 start to the preseason for the Calgary Flames.
Undefeated. A few highlights on the new Sportsnet scoreboard last night. Looked pretty darn good in high def.
It's a nice looking scoreboard, by the way.
So good.
Very, very nice.
For those who don't know, for years, when a goal was scored, all the media would rush to these little TVs in the press box
because we
to
couldn't see the replay on the Jumbotron.
And
because it wasn't an HD,
just because it was always a little, you'd be like, oh, "Did he tip? Did he tip that? Did Vladar get a piece of that? I don't know." Last night, brilliant.
Yep, looks great. It really does. And we're at a situation where I think we set a record on Monday night for the longest ever preseason postgame. I think we went for about 2.5 hours.
Really?
It was two on the podcast. We're 2 hours, 15 minutes, and that cuts out commercial breaks and stuff like that. So on the podcast, we were 2 hours and 15 minutes. People were calling. People were texting. Like, people were buzzing after 18 goals in 3 games.
So riddle me this. How would you describe the mood right now? How would you describe the sort of overarching feel of the fan base?
Buzz.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Buzz. And not the type of buzz that says, and I think there are some who have thought this or have suggested this, but it's not like people like, oh man, Flames are going to be 10 times better than we thought they were going to be. They're going to win. It's not that. It's more just, whoa, you know, maybe this young talent is going to be a little bit, is going to come to fruition a little bit earlier. Maybe some of these guys are going to be larger impact makers than we thought, or larger impact makers quicker than we thought, or whatever the case may be. And I think everybody knows that it's only 3 games into a preseason, and the preseason and training camp only gets more difficult as it moves towards its conclusion, all of that type of stuff. I think we all know and understand that we've been fooled before with good preseasons and good individual efforts and all that type of stuff before the regular season begins. But all we have to evaluate on a new look Flames team is 3 preseason games so far. And there have been some really good individual performances. I don't think anybody is suggesting that, oh, well, the Flames are going to average 6 goals a game for the regular season. Or anybody suggesting that Andrew Bacha is going to be a 60-point scorer as an 18-year-old in the NHL. No, nobody is suggesting things like that. But when you see Matt Coronato, who's got a significant amount of NHL experience under his belt now, with 5 points in 2 games, and when you see 3 goaltenders have really good performances through their first 3 starts in the preseason, and other things like that, I can understand a wee bit of excitement to get things going. And here's what I'll tell you. Yes, I always think you have to temper expectations with what you see in the preseason. And yes, you always have to take things with a grain of salt. You and I have learned that. We've seen really good preseason performances from player X or player Y before that have translated into next to nothing come the start of the regular season or over the course of the season. So yes, tempering is important, but none of this is bad. None of this is a negative. Yeah. And that's the most important thing, is that how much will it play out into the regular season, or how positive is it? Don't know. But I know it's 0% negative, and that is a good thing.
I just feel like there's an age or an age range of players where what happens in the preseason can be looked at as more of an indicator, right? And so let's use Sunday in Seattle, for example. There were two players that were probably the best Calgary Flames on the ice. One of them was 21-year-old Matt Coronato. Goal, two assists. We're going to talk lots about him, I know, on the program today. You know, is this proof of what he learned in his NHL stint last year? You know, is the work that we've heard about with skating coach Danielle Fujita, like, are we watching that, or are we seeing some extra speed? Is there more confidence than he might have had in his game and in parts of his NHL rookie campaign? All that, right? I think you can look at a 21-year-old like Matt Coronato and think, geez, those are indicators that he's taken a step. The other guy that I thought was the best of the Flames on the ice that night was Clark Bishop. And that's a guy in his late 20s, sort of an AHL journeyman, has a handful or maybe 15 NHL games on his resume. But you get less excited about those, right? Because you don't think of that as an indicator that, you know, Clark Bishop is a guy you have to have on your NHL fantasy team this year. But I think what's been so cool for Flames fans in the early stages is that, with the exception perhaps of 3-point performances in Edmonton from Jonathan Huberdeau and Justin Kirkland, the sort of standouts we've been talking about have been the young guys. The guys who are very much, I even throw Yegor Sharangovich as a guy who is still quite young, who has just signed a long-term extension, who's very much part of the when do we feel like we're going to be ready to contend group. I even throw him in that mix.
So 6-1 was the score in Seattle. 6-3 was the score in Edmonton. And then 6-1 was the score at the Saddle Dome over Edmonton. Split squad game on Monday. Hey, the text line's open at 960-960 if you want to jump in and get your thoughts cross and get your thoughts on what you've seen so far through three preseason games. You know, maybe the guy that I'm most excited about who is not one of those guys or who is not one of or doesn't fit necessarily into that mold, but could, depending on how you want to frame it, is Dan Vladar. If we're focusing on the 6-1 win over the Oilers on Monday night, the guy that and that's with a 2-goal performance from Sharangovich, a 3-point performance from Zeri, Kadri looked great, Backlund and Coleman looked great, all that type of stuff. The guy that I was most positive about coming out of Monday's win at the Dome was Dan Vladar, because he hadn't played a game since March 12th, because he's coming off hip surgery, and because he just looked good. He looked mobile. Yeah. He looked comfortable. He looked confident. And for a guy who hadn't played in more than 6 months, and for a guy who is coming off the most significant medical procedure of his career, man, that was really, really exciting to see and encouraging to see. I thought Dan Vladar's game in two periods on Monday night was awesome to see. Made 18 stops on 19 shots.
Yeah.
A couple of high dangers in there. Good for Dan.
None better than a really quick kick save. And I'm trying to remember, I don't think it was the hip that he just had repaired, however you want to put it. Not the hip he had surgery on, but really quick kick save on Adam Henrique on the breakaway there was probably the best. You and I chatted about this yesterday, and I got thinking about it more during the game and really stand by it. Like, Dan Vladar keeps telling us 6 months is when I'm supposed to be fully recovered. And that would be any day now. I want to say it was about March 21st that they announced he'd been shut down. He had surgery the following week. So any day now, we'd be at 6 months since surgery. And I just think even the fact that Dan Vladar was good to go for 40 minutes, even the fact that he stood at his locker and said, my hip felt great, I have 100% confidence in it already. Like, even if he had 12 saves last night, I think it would have been a positive for me with Dan Vladar, just because of everything it was sort of officially putting in the rearview mirror. And then to come out with the performance he did, the one that got by him, Mike Hoffman, a proven shooter on the power play. I think Artem Grushnikov kind of took Dan Vladar's eyes away as he tried to block that shot. And so, yeah, one out of 19 gets by, and that's the type of performance Dan Vladar can build on. But I think the most important thing is the confidence he just takes away from how he felt last night. Like, the fact that we're not sitting here having a conversation about, geez, are they going to have to start the season with Wolf and Cooley because Vladar is not quite ready to go? You know, how many days off is Dan Vladar going to need throughout the season? Like, that seems like something we're not even going to have to scratch. And I think that's just such a positive for both the player and the team.
Well, this was Dan postgame, a little bit of his postgame conversation in the locker room following his 18-save performance. It's only two periods. It was against a barely AHL Oilers lineup. I get all that.
And real quick, just in case anyone hadn't heard this, it was supposed to be two periods.
Yes.
That was always the plan. I know whenever a goalie gets pulled in preseason, one of the questions...
We may have told you that on Monday's program and pregame show.
We're good. But that was the plan.
It was always the plan. Yeah. He was going to go two periods. And this was Dan Vladar postgame on Monday night.
I think I got better as the game went on. Obviously, at the beginning, I didn't play for 6.5 months, so, you know, I was probably more nervous than before my first NHL game. But, you know, I think my body felt good, and as I said, as the game went on, I felt better and better, and obviously, always nice to beat those guys.
When you say nervous, it's just because you're back between the pipes. It's not because you're worried about your injury or anything?
No, you just don't know, especially after that long break, you just don't know how your body's going to feel, right? So, nervous about that, obviously. You know, I was super, super positive about my hip. So, you know, just nervous because of that long time not seeing action.
Understanding it's such a small sample size so far, but is the hip better in ways? Like, do you feel a difference?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm confident of knowing that it's only gonna get better and better. So, as I said, I mean, everybody's probably happy about today. So, you know, another day tomorrow, and let's get better.
Good for Dan. I don't know if Dan Vladar is going to post a .935 save percentage and play 60 games this year for the Flames. I'm not sitting here trying to tell you that. Two periods
That'd
of preseason.
Aggressive projection.
That would be quite aggressive. That would be a very hot take. But two periods, his first two periods in 6 months since having surgery, since playing his last game, I thought it was encouraging. And he's a guy that I know a lot of Flames fans are rooting for because he's been a good soldier here for the last few years. And so good for Dan.
He's nice to see. He's so likable, right?
He really is.
I know we're going to get into this part next. It's not just Dan Vladar. If you're Jordan Sigalette and the rest of the staff in the Flames goaltending department, like, this competition's off to a great start, isn't it?
Wolf, 32-33 on Sunday in Seattle. Devin Cooley, 44-47 in a 6-3
Sounds
win.
Sounds like a barrage.
I went back and I watched a good chunk.
Were you able
to? Okay. Yeah, I was able to go watch a good chunk of Monday's game in Edmonton because I got a couple of texts from some people. They're like, Devin's putting on a clinic up there. So I went and I watched it. The Oilers peppered him with shots. I would say a good chunk of those 47 shots from the two-plus periods I saw before having to get ready for the show were medium to high danger. Like, Natural Stat Trick counted 15 high dangers from the Oilers. A good chunk of the other ones, I would say, were pretty dangerous, non-high dangers.
Yeah.
Cooley was dialed. And so, good for him, good for Dustin, good for Vladar, and it just adds to the intrigue of the most intriguing position the Flames have this camp. And honestly, as we've said multiple times, this conversation isn't ending next week. It's not ending next month. This thing probably doesn't get fully put to bed until at the earliest the new year.
It is, though, a big part of the significance, at least from my vantage point, of Dan Vladar being ready at this point to be part of that competition. Because you can't have him playing catch up, I don't think, with the two other goals. At least I shouldn't say you can't. You could, but that's not what you want. It feels like these three guys have started on a pretty level playing field. And I'm curious to see where it goes. I got to be honest, I would not be laying money on who I think will be in the crease on opening night.
No, me neither. Goaltending, very positive on both Sunday and Monday night. How about some of the new forward lines? I mean, the Huberdeau line with Mantha and Pospisil look good in Edmonton.
That's
positive.
That was, and I'm referring now to the highlight of the Mantha goal on the 2-on-1. That was what we saw in spades from Jonathan Huberdeau a few years ago.
That look off right before he gave it back to Mantha.
Every single person in the rink
thought he was shooting it.
Yep. And quite frankly, if the save gets made there, if he doesn't shoot it and it doesn't wind up in a goal, everyone's going, oh my.
Here we go again with number 10.
How do you not shoot that? And I get it, but that looked to me like the Jonathan Huberdeau that the Calgary Flames traded for and are desperate to figure out a way to get. I know this. The ship has sailed on Jonathan Huberdeau, the 100 and whatever point guy, but that Jonathan Huberdeau, like, that was one of those plays that sort of exudes confidence. And if he can get in a little bit of a groove, I get it. First preseason game. Yes, I know. It was September 23rd. I get all that, but you'll take the positives.
We saw the two other early top nine lines at the Dome.
Yeah.
Backlund, Coleman, Zeri, and then Kadri Kuzmenko, Sharon Govich. Both had some good moments. Both looked good. Want to play this clip from Cale MacLean, Flames assistant coach. He joined us on our Flames Talk postgame show on Monday night. I asked him about those two lines, and he gave his initial thoughts of the new Kadri line and the new Backlund line, again, early in training camp.
I did see some chemistry from that group of Kadri, Kuzi, and Sharkey, and I think you're going to, because they're just elite offensive players and they like to use each other. Kuzmenko, Kadri like to find each other, and I think that's evident from power play repetitions, but also within the game, they're looking for each other as soon as they get the puck. So I think good things from that. On the Backlund, Coleman, Zari line, I think it took them a little bit to get going, and then Zari found that goal by driving the net. I thought that was an excellent play, which Blake and Michael they're pretty good at isolating that one defenseman and creating the two-on-one and then making something a little more happen from the space that they have. So I feel like there can be something there. I think that they started to show it in the second half of the game, and I think it'll be interesting to see as this thing plays out.
For sure, and there's going to be more opportunities for other guys on the Backlund line. There's going to be, I think as we move deeper into the preseason, we will see both Zeri and Sharon Govich play at least a game down the middle, as much as they're clearly most committed to Pospisil down the middle. I do think we'll see that at some point.
Are you suggesting tinkering with the lines with an undefeated team?
Yeah. You know
bold.
What? You know
it's
what?
Bold. It's bold.
I'm all about the process, Wes.
I love it.
I don't get caught up in the little things. I'm all about the process.
The performance of Connor Zeri last night.
Yes, I know that was one that you wanted to touch on.
It raises such an interesting debate for me, right? Connor Zeri goes out last night, scores two goals, one of which was on the power play, made a minor league defenseman look like he couldn't be on a plane back to Bakersfield fast enough, rips a low shot. That was his second of the night. First one, great redirect, awesome pass by Flames captain Michael Backlund. Quite frankly, Backlund had him for that sort of same redirect for the hat trick goal, and Olivier Rodrigue,
yep,
makes the save, and then Miramanov cleans up the rebound. So here's the debate for me. You can look at it and say, man, you know, Connor Zeri looked like a really good fit, and I thought he did on that line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. Understanding that the greatest test for that line is often who they're playing against, and in a home preseason game, you're not getting a great litmus test of your shutdown abilities. Mm-hmm. But you can look at...
Especially against that Oilers team.
Yeah, you can look at it and say, okay, well, hey, he was a fit. Ryan Huska, when he dreamt up these line combos, I think he might have found something here. And the flip side, and I still don't know what way to look at it, so maybe you tell me, the flip side is, did Connor Zary show us again last night how much of an offensive engine he can be for this team? And if the answer is yes, is that the right spot in the lineup for him? I don't know the answer.
I'll tell you this much. If Connor Zary can still generate offense on that line, knowing the responsibilities and matchups they already will take, because it does not matter who's on the left side of that line, or conversely the right side, because Blake can also play the left wing. Whoever is the third forward on that line, doesn't matter. They're going to be the number one shutdown head-to-head line. That's we know that.
Right.
And so
you could be the third guy on that line, and it would be the
I do think
one.
I'd bring them down. I know that Blake and Michael have a good job of elevating their line mates. As good as they are, they'd be in tough.
I do keep searching you on Natural Stat Trick, and your name doesn't even come up, which is not a good sign.
Too negative. The numbers are too in the negative. So that would be the challenge of both their lives, elevating me. But whoever is going to be the winger there, they're still going to be playing those minutes. Blake Coleman scored 30 playing in that role last year. Michael Backlund has been a 45, 50-point guy. He's been a multiple 20-goal guy playing in that role. We know those guys can still generate at a decent rate. If Connor Zary can be a 50, 60-point guy on that line, well, then all of a sudden, you're talking about a line that is just, that's a good line.
Yeah.
And that's a line that you can throw out in every situation against center X or center Y and expect them to generate. I think you'll take that all day if it ends up working out.
Yeah.
One game, I know that we're not ready to say it will, but I think it's a fair question to bring up.
No, I mean, if you're playing the Oilers at home in the regular season, you're asking that line to keep Connor McDavid off the score sheet, and you're probably not watching Michael Backlund routinely try to set up Connor Zary for backdoor redirects or side door redirects, right? Like, the job description's different. I got to admit, you texted me from Penticton and mentioned you just talked to Huska and he'd thrown out that line. I of all the guys I sort of considered as potential fits there.
Yeah.
Whether it was Jacob Pelche, whether it was Matt Coronado,
whether
it was Yegor Sharangovich, like, I did not have Connor Zary on my radar, but damn, looked good last night.
My first example of why neither of us should be NHL head coaches.
The very first one. Yeah.
Prior to this, I thought we could do it, but now I'm not so sure. Steinberg West, we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
So I think it's safe to say, as we continue along on this Tuesday, Steinberg and West, I think it's safe to say Matt Coronado, he's impressed in the early stages of preseason. That's now 2 years in a row where Matt Coronado might be the most impressive player in the early stages of the preseason. I think the Flames played 3 games and 2 nights to start last year as well. And Matt Coronado was one of the guys we were absolutely buzzing about, including his hat trick in the 10-0 win over Vancouver to open up the preseason. Okay, 1 year later, 5 points in 2 games for Coronado. That is exciting and encouraging to see. Sam Hanzek has played. He looked really good in Edmonton, looked really good in Seattle. 5 points in 2 games for Hanzek, the 2023 first rounder. Adam Klapka scored a couple of goals in the win over Seattle, and Klapka continues to be one of those names that hovers around the conversation of being in this opening night lineup. And yet, when you go through the training camp line so far, I know a lot of people have, I think rightfully so or understandably so, jumped to a conclusion that the top nine set, Zary's going to be with Backlund and Coleman, Pospisil is going to start with Huberdeau and Mantha, and it's going to be Sharangovich with Kadri and Kuzmenko. Now, I know for sure that if you posed that statement to Ryan Huska, the head coach, he'd say, hold up a second. Nothing is set in stone. There's still plenty of time left, and we're going to try lots of things. I know for a fact that he would have that, like, okay.
Easy. To quote Nazem Kadri,
pump
the brakes.
However, I do understand the sentiment where people say, how the hell is Matt Coronado going to be in the opening night lineup, regardless of how good his preseason is? We talked to Frank Saravalli a little bit about that earlier on Tuesday's show. I know going into training camp, one of the things some on the Flames were wondering about is how, like, if Coronado has a good camp, how do we make that happen? Well, he's having a good camp so far. He's shooting it. He's finishing. He looks dynamic. I still can't get over that backhand pass he laid on Jeremy Poirier's stick on Sunday in Seattle.
Yeah.
So whether it is Coronado or Hanzek or Klapka or any other forward name that is on the bubble or quote-unquote the outside looking in, and I remove Pelche because I do see a little bit more of a path for him, but we can even throw him into this conversation. How do these guys make the team if the top nine's already set? And specifically, guys like Coronado and Hanzek, who probably shouldn't be playing on fourth lines, they're probably better suited to be playing high-leverage AHL minutes instead of lesser NHL minutes. How the hell do the Flames work this out?
Well, and I think to answer that question properly, you have to then bump the focus to the other side of the equation. And by that, I mean Flames coach Ryan Huska keeps telling us the young guys have to, they're going to get opportunity, but they have to take a job. He keeps saying you have to bump somebody out of a job. And so while Matt Coronado has put up great numbers so far in the preseason, and Sam Hanzek has really stood out or at least jumped off the stat sheet with 5 assists so far, what I think you need to bear in mind is that Yegor Sharangovich has 2 goals so far. That's not a guy who is getting bumped out, at least the way he's playing right now. That's not a guy who's getting bumped out of a top nine spot. There's been so much excitement in the organization to see how Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Mantha might click on a line, and especially with the speed that Martin Pospisil brings up the middle. And it's kind of a case of so far, so good, right? Like, you, I don't know that you want to mess with that. Well, how'd Connor Zeri look in his first audition with Backlund and Coleman? Well, really damn good. And so I think that's the especially tricky part, is whose job is there for the bumping, right? Could you expedite your search for a new home for Andrei Kuzmenko, a guy who is entering the last season of his deal and, you know, most believe will finish the season in another uniform? Yeah, you could, although he's sort of the key to why you think your power play finally improved at the end of last season. And one of the reasons for optimism that your power play could be better. And so that, to me, is as big a part of the equation as anything that Coronado or Hanzek or Pelche or Klapka does in preseason is, okay, yeah, can they do enough that they have become a threat to bump somebody out of a job? That's what the Flames want. But are any of the guys who are candidates to be bumped playing at a level that underwhelms you enough to say, yeah, we're going to give that spot to one of the kids?
Yeah, well, and that's just it. Like, what opened up some spots last year were injuries to Kevin Rooney and Jacob Pelche. That paved the way for a Matt Coronado to continue. I don't know if Coronado would have made the roster last year had it not been for those players. And maybe he would have. I don't know. But I do, the injuries, as much as you didn't want Jacob Pelche and Kevin Rooney to separate their shoulders, of course you didn't want that. It did allow more flexibility to start a guy like Coronado in the NHL. And allowed, when Coronado, it was clear that he had to go back to the American League and get some seasoning down there, it allowed them to retain the flexibility to bring Zeri and Pospisil into the lineup a month later. Well, I'm not hoping for injuries. You don't ever want anybody to get hurt, but that would be one way that something could happen. And training camps around the NHL, injuries happen, and injuries roll in a physical sport. So one guy might be hurt for 3 weeks, and while he's recovering and getting closer to come back, somebody else. Like, there's always, and we see it every year with every team, but as of right now, September 24th, with 3 preseason games in the book, yeah, I still think it's an uphill climb for these guys to make it. And yet, going back to what Saravalli said in his hit with us on this Tuesday. And what I believe to be the case, I do think if Coronado proves he's one of the nine best forwards on this team, they'll make a difficult decision to put him in there. I don't know what that difficult decision would be, but I do think that they're willing to make some of those calls and maybe ruffle a few feathers if it means furthering their big picture, which Coronado would be a part of.
Yeah, and in that sense, because I agree with you, I don't think Ryan Huska is going to shy away from making that difficult decision in his lineup, and then what does that mean for Craig Conroy as he ultimately makes decisions with the roster. I don't sense any hesitance to do that. I just think the onus is now on the established guys to play well enough that you say, well, yeah, the kids have had great camps, but who are we taking out? And I know with the focus on the future, that's not what some people want to hear. You know, I mentioned this on social media last night. So Coronado has gone and put up 5 points. How do you get him in a top nine spot? And several people have responded and said, well, you don't need to put him in a top nine spot. You build a more talented fourth line. And I saw one fan suggested Hanzek, Morton, and Coronado. I think multiple people said that. I think I saw one that was Pelche, Morton, and Coronado. I still expect the Calgary Flames to employ a fairly traditional fourth line because Ryan Lomberg and Kevin Rooney are going to be fixtures on their penalty kill. And could Sam Morton kill penalties? Hey, maybe so. I think we'll see him get an opportunity to prove he can. Do you have other options? Maybe you do, but I do think that the Flames would like a sort of energy line. And I guess then the question becomes, well, could one of the kids fit on that? If so, who is it and what's it mean for the rest of them? And you raise a good point too. Like the debate over Matt Coronado potentially playing 12 minutes a night in the NHL or playing, as you like to put it, high leverage minutes.
Whoa. That's just a good term.
No, and I'm not trying to call you out, but there's a debate to be had there, right? There's a debate to be had about, and maybe Coronado is not the best example for this debate because he's a guy who's been an AHL All-Star already, who has had some success, albeit in still a relatively small sample size at the American Hockey League level. But let's use Hanzek, for example. Like, you don't need to rush Sam Hanzek into a fourth-line role in the NHL. I don't think it makes any sense, quite frankly. But, you know, at what point does it make sense? Does it make sense for 23-year-old Adam Klapka?
Sounds right.
A guy like Sam Morton, obviously, is further along.
Just turned 24. 10 days ago.
Yeah. And so, this is exactly the kind of problem you want as an organization, isn't it?
And it's a problem that, you know, and I'm not suggesting that Calgary's going to turn into a dynasty Detroit Red Wings team, but they're always the example of the hothouse, right? Like the team that left guys in the American League or kept guys in the American League with that Grand Rapids team for longer than maybe they needed. And then they were clearly ready for the NHL when a spot opened up. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that theory. The only thing is players are different in 2024. Contracts are short. Players, I think, have more leverage now than they did 10, 15 years ago. The team still has the most leverage when it comes to young players, but young players do have more leverage they can exert. And so you do need to, and Craig Conroy, being a former player, is completely eyes wide open on this. You do have to factor some of those things in when you're making some of these decisions too.
Yeah.
So I think, and that when you go through some of the different options as to how this could play out, and let's use Coronado as the best example, because no disrespect to Hanzek, as good as his first two preseason games have been, Hanzek's played zero professional games. And so Sam Hanzek in the American League to start the year just makes sense. And honestly, probably Hunter Brustevich as well. But going to the American League when you haven't played a professional game, while it might be disappointing, I think everybody, even representatives for the players, they're going to understand that. Coronado's a little bit different because he had an AHL All-Star season last year. He looked far readier for the NHL in the back part of last season when he was back up. And if he continues to have a strong camp, that'll be the second straight year he's been one of the standouts at training camp. So then what do you do if you're the Flames, knowing that sending him back to the American League could be a little bit more of a kick to the gut and a little bit more of something that maybe upsets the entire camp? And these are things that you got to take into account in this day and age. And so I do wonder the delicate balance you got to strike there. And again, it just goes down to, it's a big dilemma. And the other problem is that, you know, Klapka and Pelche are in one category for me. I don't mind those guys playing fourth line minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas Hanzek, don't think it makes sense. Coronado, don't think it makes sense. And good of the development overall of the player, fourth line NHL, first line AHL, the latter is always going to make sense. But top nine NHL or AHL, that's where the dilemma really hits. And yeah, I'm really fascinated to see how the Flames make this happen.
And good on so far Matt Coronado and good on Sam Hanzek for making this a relevant conversation today.
You'd much rather have that than some of the years. I remember Brad Treliving coming out one year. I don't know if it was with us or if it was a scrum. And he basically said, our decisions are too easy.
Yeah.
This is a junk
camp. Kids aren't ready.
Essentially, his words are, this is a junk camp. Nobody's making our life difficult. Our decisions are already made. You don't want that. Craig Conroy and company would much rather have difficult decisions to make and have some sleepless nights about how you're going to fit in this 22-year-old that is performing at the same level as a 28-year-old. Like, these are things you want to have happen, but yeah, and I do want to correct myself. Hanzek did play professional games at the end of last season. Played
three?
I think he played
two regular seasons and one playoff.
Yes, I do want to correct myself.
Or the other way around, one and two, perhaps?
Yeah, something like that. Brustevich has not played a professional game. Hanzek has played three.
Yeah, you raise a good point about those camps where you look and say, well, okay, like you can set the lineup, and there are cities around the NHL right now, because of the spot that their teams are at, that they know exactly, barring injury, what their opening night lineup is going to look like, right? I don't know on Rangers talk or Bruins talk or whatever how much debate there is over kind of the nuts and bolts of the lineup. The one thing I will say is, if a Matt Coronado winds up in the AHL to start the season, or a Sam Hanzek, as expected, goes to the AHL to start the season, I just want everyone to remember how much change there's been in this organization, how much of a youth movement there's been in a short period of time. Like, if Andre Kuzmenko beats out Matt Coronado for a job, it doesn't mean that the organization has suddenly taken on the wrong direction and aren't giving the kids a chance. But it's going to be then incumbent on the organization to make sure Matt Coronado has a spot sooner than later.
Okay, let me throw a couple scenarios at you in terms of, just off the top of my head, some of the ways they could make it happen. And let's use Coronado because he's been the most impressive guy. Then we'll hit the text line and you can just rapid fire answer as to what you think. So, to get Coronado into the top nine, what about moving Zeri to number four center and putting either Sharon Govich on the backline line and moving Coronado to the Kadri line, or putting Kadri on the backline line? Like or dislike?
Strong dislike.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I get it. I think this next one there might be even stronger dislike on. What about moving Pospisil to the number four center role, and that then juggling up some of the combinations you've got right now, but getting Coronado into the top nine?
And so you're moving Pospisil out of the top nine. Then are you giving one of Zeri or Sharon Govich a top nine center spot?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
you know,
maybe just move Zeri in with Huberdeau and Mantha, and then Coronado can move in somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm actually, because I think Marty Pospisil's game, while I don't think he sort of tops out at a fourth liner, I do think his game has some fourth line. I mean, that's not a knock to say there's some fourth line
qualities. Pospisil and Lomberg on the same line.
To
have
his
fun.
Game. I watched those two practice on the penalty kill together the other day, and just the speed and tenacity was quite something to watch. I guess I still don't love the idea because I do think he's a nice fit for top nine center, but I actually like the idea of Connor Zeri on a fourth line. To me, just neutralizes his offense so fiercely that I'm less opposed to Pospisil as a fourth liner.
Could you move Mantha to the fourth line?
I think it can be a carrot that you use to keep a guy motivated who has told us when we talked to him on Canada Day that the knock on him throughout his career has been inconsistency. I'm going to be paraphrasing here, but I remember Ryan Huska saying early in camp, there's nights you'd watch this guy and think he was the best player on the ice.
Yep.
Now, the coach didn't continue his thought to say there's other nights that you watch and can't find him on the ice, but that has been the roller coaster ride that has sometimes been Anthony Mantha's career. So could he find himself for spurts on a fourth line or quite frankly, even scratched? I think absolutely he could, but if he's on pace to score 20 or 25 with Jonathan Huberdeau, I don't think he'd do that.
Let's read a few texts. 960 960. This one from Kevin in Nanton. Hello, Nanton. If he's playing as he is, do you think the potential third round pick you might get for Kuznetsov at the deadline is worth more than a disgruntled Matt Coronado for the big picture? Which is a hell of a question. And what I think is one of the things they'll have to debate inside that war room.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that easy to find a taker for Kuzmenko because his game is so one-dimensional. Now, whatever number of goals he's on pace for, certainly that can change the equation. But I would just be cautious about the idea that there's a lineup of teams ready to give you something for Andre Kuzmenko.
Yeah. Robert in Lethbridge, the Detroit over-ripen system is antiquated. All Ken Holland did in Edmonton was rot young talent by percolating them in the AHL. Just look at the Oilers' development success. It's awful. That comes from Robert in Lethbridge. And I wasn't necessarily saying that I think the Detroit over-ripen model is the way to go. I'm just saying that was one of the success stories. But again, we're talking like 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. That was a thing. That's why I brought up players are different in 2024 than they were in 2010.
Yeah.
They've got more leverage than they ever have.
And they're just more ready than they've ever been.
Also
true. Because they've been, you know, if we still had Ray Edwards on, I'm sure he'd tell us this, like, you know, you've got 14-year-olds lifting weights now working towards a career in hockey.
Yep.
Right? You've got 12-year-olds having quinoa for dinner because they want to be the next big thing.
Quinoa's delicious.
Well, let's not get carried away. You just have a different sort of level of professionalism in hockey prospects.
Dylan and Revy, move Mantha down was a dumb move in the first place to get him. I don't care about Huberdeau chemistry or a third round pick at the deadline. I care about developing young players.
I just can't stress enough that there has to be continued investment in maximizing the confidence of the guy that you're paying 70 whatever million for. I get the focus on the future. Let's figure out, get as many kids as we can. Like, I get that, but I don't think we can just forget about Huberdeau's productivity as a problem that we'll deal with at the end of 2031 when his contract runs out.
Nick says Coronado can afford to spend another season with the Wranglers with a couple call-ups for injuries and to replace a trade later in the season, similar to Wolf last season. And the opportunity is for Coronado to become a full-time NHLer before the end of this season. That comes from Nick. This reads, it's very simple. You dress the best lineup that's going to be able to get you to fight for the eighth playoff spot. And you're not looking, we're not looking to tank. All these idiots that are saying tank, get a top five pick, blah, blah, blah. That's not happening. This team isn't bad enough to tank. You have three solid lines. You got to make up a fourth line. They're going for that spot. And you think
70, whatever million for, I get the focus on the future. Let's figure out, get as many kids as we can. Like, I get that, but I don't think we can just forget about Huberto's productivity as a problem that we'll deal with at the end of 2031 when his contract runs out.
Nick says Coronado can afford to spend another season with the Wranglers with a couple call-ups for injuries and to replace a trade later in the season, similar to Wolf last season. And the opportunity is for Coronado to become a full-time NHLer before the end of this season. That comes from Nick. This reads... It's very simple. You dress the best lineup that's going to be able to get you to fight for the eighth playoff spot, and you're not looking. We're not looking to tank. All these idiots that are saying tank, get a top five pick, blah, blah, blah. That's not happening. This team isn't bad enough to tank. You have three solid lines. You got to make up a fourth line. They're going for that spot, and you think someone sitting in their office... I don't know what the rest of that text means, but I get the point of that text. I understand where that text was going. This is from Colin, who says, why couldn't you have a fourth line of Pelche, Rooney, and Coronado? I like the way that could match up against other teams' fourth lines, but then follows up with, oh yeah, I forgot about the Lamborghini in Ryan Lomberg, and he is in the conversation. Christopher says, I see Coronado maybe getting the Zeri treatment, great camp, but sent down anyways. And when an injury opens up a spot, he seizes it and never looks back. Darren and Mackenzie Lake. The Oilers' issue stemmed from rushing their young guys into a lineup with no support, not over-ripening. Calgary currently has a very supportive structure. I think what Robert and Lethbridge was talking about is more recent Oilers' development as opposed to... That was about 10 years ago when the rushing, the Yakupovs and the Halls and the Eberlys and the Magnus PRVs, so on and so forth, those guys were getting rushed to the NHL. That changed, and the development record hadn't been as good over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and I don't know whether that's pinned more on drafting or more on development, but you're absolutely right. The Edmonton Oilers have had trouble sort of growing their own supporting pieces, and then in a couple of cases, obviously, keeping the ones they have grown.
Please don't yell at us, 780 area codes. We're not trying to take shots at the Oilers. I don't have the energy for that. Mick says, if you want Coronado and Pelche in the top 12, then Zeri and Pospisil have to be at center. Rooney is a 13th forward. There you go, 960, 960 on the text line. It's a good topic, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon because, honestly, Wes, knowing what I know about Matt, knowing how much he put into this offseason, knowing how well he's skating and how well he's shooting it right now, I honestly don't think that Matt Coronado's going away anytime in this preseason training camp. I think he's going to make this a real difficult thing for him for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, still shoots right. Right?
Yep.
Which is a big time area of need. Yeah, a big time area of need is right.
Great stuff on the text line. Fun conversation. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam and Connor, our outstanding producers this hour. And that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.